Welcome to yet another episode of Random Trek, the podcast where I, Scott McNulty, watch a random episode of Star Trek and talk about it with a non-random guest. My guest today is Michael T. Rose, who I have known in internet years forever. Mike, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Scott. It's great to talk to you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Tell the folks how they might know you. I know you so well.
Well, for those who don't know me so well, I am, as Scott said, Michael Rose. I am one of the editorians over at the unofficial Apple weblog, which is where Scott and I first made our acquaintance. So yes, I've been working at the unofficial Apple weblog, TUAW.com, for quite some time. That is what I do in my spare time. In my work time, I actually work at a large software as a service vendor, Salesforce.com, that has nothing to do with the fact that we're talking about Star Trek today. It just is, you know, the idea of big computers in clouds is vaguely Star Trekian, so I like to bring it up. And they can find me on the Twitters at Mike T. Rose, and those are the places I am usually locatable.
Now, Mike, tell me a little bit about your interest in Star Trek. Would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
Yeah, I am a Star Trek fan, and I've been a Star Trek fan for basically as long as I can remember. It was interesting listening to Jason's recounting on your first episode of how he came to fandom, and he's a smidge younger than I am, not too much, maybe a couple years, but I too was born or came of awareness after the original network run of the original series of Star Trek, but not that long after. So I think I really, at the point that I was watching television of my own volition, probably was at the point when Star Trek had passed into its first round of syndication. Now, I should point out that in my household as a kid, I watched very little television because my mother was quite strict about that, and it was limited both in time and in topic. So we were a big Sesame Street and the Electric Company household, but not so big on anything else. So my primary introduction to Star Trek when I began to be able to make my own media choices was through books.
Well, that brings us to the episode we're going to talk about, which will let us segue into talking about The Next Generation, because in fact, it is a Next Generation episode. And even more exciting, it's a first season Next Generation episode called Conspiracy, which is episode 25.
And there was so much buildup. I was actually in college when Next Generation premiered, and it so happened that I was the entertainment editor of the college newspaper. So I was and I was going to a relatively geeky college. So there was the level of student interest in this was, let us say, high. So we did a full page spread with, you know, original art on The Next Generation, and everybody was very excited, and it premiered, and everybody watched Encounter at Farpoint in the dorms, and it was a big thing. I think they even had viewing parties on campus. And then, you know, after the first like three or four episodes, everybody's like, okay, you know, seems nice.
Yeah.
It took a while. It was a little bit of a slow burn, and I think that, you know, because the episode we're talking about today is a latter part of the first season, they at least had the characterizations were not, and the performances were not so wacky anymore, that it doesn't seem that weird on current viewing. There's some great there's some great moments we'll talk about during the course of the show, but it is one of those where you do remember, wow, yeah, the first season was pretty rocky.
But let's get into the episode, and then we can talk about various things that happened. So this episode starts off, the Enterprise is off going to Pacifica to do something. We don't know what they're going to do there, but they're going to hang out. And we do know that Deanna Troi is looking forward to taking a swim in an ocean, which leads to an odd exchange with Data, in which Data says, well, why don't you just go to the holodeck? And Deanna Troi says, well, have you ever swam in an ocean? In the moonlight? Actually, she says, have you ever swam in the moonlight? To which Data responds, you can swim in moonlight. Which I found odd.
Strangely charming, but odd.
Yes, because Data's pretty smart, and I think he would know what that meant. But moving on.
Yeah.
Then we get this code 47 message. The Enterprise does, we don't. From Starfleet. But Code 47 means that only the captain can see it, and there's no record of it, and there's a very stern, the computer voice gives a very stern warning about how no one's recording it, nothing's traced.
And can I just, the first of many sort of continuity nitpicks on this, under what circumstances in the Enterprise's duty roster scheduling would all the other sort of A-shift bridge officers be on the bridge, but Captain Picard would be asleep?
Sleeping. Well, he does take a 3 o'clock nap.
It's constitutional. The Starfleet siesta was an innovation that was very brief, but welcomed by captains everywhere. Right. Yeah, that's the first weird thing. It's like, okay, you know, Riker's there, and Geordi's there, and Data's there, so it seems like it's A shift, but...
That's true. And Worf is also there.
And Worf, like, everyone else is there. So is the captain sick? You know, what's going on?
He doesn't seem pleased to be woken up, so...
I mean, it raises a lot of questions. There's always questions about why are we always encountering aliens when it's the same people on the bridge? Like, why, you know, they can't be going 24/7 or, you know, 32/5 or whatever the Starfleet, you know, Stardate schedule is.
Right.
So you do have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but that's one of the moments that just rings sort of weird for me.
I suppose Data could do it 24/7, but everybody else would need
that. That would be cruel.
Well, what does he care? He's just a machine until a few more seasons from now when he becomes a real boy, or a sentient being at least. My other thing is, so Picard gets up and goes to his view screen and opens the channel. And as he's getting this message, well, it's not really a message. He's talking to Walter Keel, who's one of his old friends. But the entire time, there is a bright flashing orange light above the screen, which I would have found very distracting. In fact, just watching it, I found it very distracting. If I was actually talking to someone, like it would be as if I'm talking to you on Skype right now, and I put like a police siren thing on the top of my monitor and just had it going for no reason.
like the light on top of the TARDIS. It's like, what is that doing there?
Why is it? But I guess it's to make sure he knows that this conversation is not being recorded. Maybe.
I suppose. I mean, it is a fascinating conversation that he has with Walker Keel.
That's right.
An old friend of a captain. And pointing out that, you know, Starfleet apparently has no mandatory retirement age, which will be emphasized further later in the episode. That we have people who are clearly past their prime commanding flying planet destroying weapons.
That's right.
So,
and
you know,
he's calling his old friend to say, hey, have you noticed anything weird?
Something strange.
And Picard's like, well, other than you calling me the code 47 message, it's kind of weird. And so he's like, well, we've seen some strange orders from Starfleet Command, some people acting oddly. And Supercar's like, well, tell me more. What are you seeing? And Walker says, well, I can't on subspace. Who knows who's listening? He doesn't say that, but it's implied.
Maybe the orange light is like the S in HTTPS. Like,
it's a little lock that you see in your browser, right?
A little browser lock.
It's just a flashing. That's how important the security is.
Not over subspace, really. I mean, because we're gonna go literally light years out of our way to have a little face-to-face chat. Okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's what he suggests. Let's meet on this random planet, and I'll tell you more. So Picard's like, well, I don't know if I should do that or not, but he agrees. And then he goes to the bridge and says, okay, everybody, we're going to this weird planet. Actually, he says, hey, Data, do you know anything about this weird planet? Which I thought was kind of odd. Because Walker Keel says, don't trust anybody. That's how he ends his message, right? So he basically wants Picard to keep it to himself, even though his ship is full of people and he needs to tell them they're going to this planet. So instead of asking the computer, which also has a vocal interface, he walks onto the bridge with the bridge crew within earshot and says, hey, Data, what do you know about this planet?
Yes. Because we know that the prime directive is actually not dealing with encounters with cultures that do not have spaceflight, it actually is dealing with exposition and how it must be used at any given moment. The Prime Directive says you must discuss things with other crew members so that the audience understands.
Exactly. And so Data says, oh, it's a Federation mining planet that is uninhabited. And Picard's like, great, Geordi, take us there. Go to my ready room. Nobody talk about this with anybody. And everyone is quite confused. But they do it anyway because they are loyal Starfleet officers. Or are they? Well, spoiler alert, they are. And off they go to this planet. They scan the planet for life forms. Well, as they're arriving, they notice that three Federation ships are already in orbit. They can identify two, but for some reason they can't identify the third until a couple minutes. And then they find out that it's Walker Keel ship. Everybody is quite... Worf says, hey, none of them have answered our hails. Picard says, stop hailing them. And beam me down to the location where the three life forms that you have found are. So they beam him a little further away from the life forms than I would think one would be beamed if you want to be beamed towards the life forms. But it makes it more dramatic. So he's beamed basically outside of this cave where he has to walk down some kind of weird ramp to get into the cave. And some wacky guy who is a captain comes out with a phaser, points it at him. And it's Rix, but we don't know who that is. But out comes Walker Keel. And I actually like the scene where Walker is asking Picard about how, you know, how Beverly Crusher met Jack and trying to trick Picard into remembering things incorrectly.
Yeah, it's a very effective little scene. It's like, you remember that time where we fought the Tholians? He's like, that never happened, you know.
Oh, that's right. That was my brother. You don't have any brothers.
You don't have any brothers. Oh, it's like, you remember when I, you know, you introduced Jack Crusher to Beverly. I wasn't there. I mean, and what's funny is that Picard gets so irritated about it. He's like, what the deuce is this?
Well, he should be irritated. He was just going to go on his own mission, and he's gone flown light years out of his way because he basically on the word of his friend, right? And then his friend is putting him through this little song and dance.
Yes.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and also keep in mind too that Captain Rix is being played by Michael Berryman, who is one of the creepiest actors of all time.
Captain Rix is very creepy.
He's very creepy. This is the same guy from The Hills Have Eyes and all these different horror movies, who actually does look like an alien. He has a congenital condition that makes him look like an alien. He's wearing makeup in that scene, but anytime you see Michael Berryman, you know that bad stuff is going down.
It's true. And that Rix, for you Star Trek aficionados out there, marks the first Bullion to appear in Star Trek.
Uh-huh.
The most famous Bullion of all probably is Mott, the Enterprise barber. But those are two little factoids.
I'm not sure he's famous to the Bullions.
Well, no, but to the rest of the world, he is the most famous Bullion.
It's venerated. The Bullion culture is built entirely around the veneration of barbers. There are statues of Mott everywhere.
Which is odd because they're all bald, but... they're it's straight a very, culture.
It's a challenging environment.
So they have this clandestine meeting. Rix, Walker Keel, and another captain's name who I've forgotten. But she is
Trila Scott.
Keel says basically something weird's happening. We don't know what's going on, but you need to go to Earth and figure out what's happening. I don't trust my first officer. I don't, because my medical officer says he's fine, but I don't trust my medical officer either. I know I sound like I'm having paranoid delusions, but trust me, something's going on. And Rix is like, yeah, something's going on. The female captain also says, hey, yeah, something's going on. So Picard's like, all right, I guess I can go check out things. But first, I really need to go to Pacifica.
Yeah, it was supposed to be there hours ago, and there's going to be trouble.
That's right. So I'm going to go to Pacifica. You guys do whatever you're going to do, and I'll keep my eyes peeled. And then Rix has a very creepy thing, and he says, watch your back, Picard.
again, Michael Berryman.
It's true. Then you think, well, clearly Rix is the enemy, and he's going to be the one who's doing all the bad things in this episode. But we never see him again. So, but it was a creepy little scene at the end there. So Picard goes back up to the ship. He's conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. He really respects Walker Keel. But on the other hand, this is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
So they go to the ocean world. Well, they're back on track to go to the ocean world at warp 8 because they need to make up for some lost time. And on their way, Worf senses some kind of disturbance in a sector.
you said that had a vaguely Jedi connotation.
It's true. Worf's sensors.
This is a disturbance.
Detected. That's more Star Trek. A disturbance in a nearby sector. And of course, which I thought this moment was kind of funny, Riker says, well, I guess we're going to be late to Pacifica. And they say, yep, let's go investigate. So they are explorers, so they need to figure this stuff out. But I do find this whole thing weird, because then they go into this sector, they're scanning, and Worf is like, oh, there's lots of small objects, so I can't tell what they are. So, let's get closer, says Picard. So they get closer. And Worf is like, well, it seems like some kind of debris. And now, as a viewer, I am sitting at home. I don't have any sensors, or fancy computers, or Starfleet training. But I think to myself, one of the ships has been destroyed, and this is the wreckage. And it takes the crew a little while to figure this out. You would think the sensors would pick up the materials, and they could quickly say, hey, this is some kind of starship that's been destroyed. But it takes them a minute, but basically they figure it out, and based on the volume of debris, although there are no bodies, which is an interesting tidbit that they never come back to.
Right. Like, it's possible that the entire crew of said ship was freeze-dried and transported someplace else.
Yes, so they could be somewhere. They could have gone on escape pods or something. Any number of things could have happened to them. That could have been an interesting point where something crazy could have happened. But no, that they never bring that up again. They point it out, and then never bring it up again. So basically, this is Walker Keel's ship has been destroyed. Now things change. Picard is pissed off and kind of sad. So he talks.
Well, and this is like Dr. Crusher's, you know, it's particularly poignant because Dr. Crusher comes on the bridge and is like,
oh, that's true.
You know, I heard the Horatio was nearby. Oh, did you see Walker? No, couldn't be done. Couldn't be helped. You know, very quick captain business. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I would have loved to have seen him because he is one of the few connections I have to my happily married life with Jack Crusher, who was awesome and a beast in the sack. And God, I miss my husband, my dead husband. You, Jean-Luc, you are a constant reminder of my loss and my pain. So why would I not want to subject myself to more painful nostalgia? And oh, great, now he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead. Sorry.
It's like, I mean, that's like the Crusher pathos, you know, railgun of you know what. What bad crap has to happen to this poor family to drive the narrative of the show forward? I mean, I'm no Beverly Crusher, but I know that if I were in a similar situation, I would probably not choose to put myself on a flying tin can with my dead husband's best friend for 7 years. And, you know, but it would have been lovely to see her, you know, light a candle for this guy or have a little memorial service for the Horatio. It's got to have taken them some time to get to their next destination, which we will discuss in a moment. But, yeah, I mean, Beverly doesn't – it's not even that she doesn't have time to have emotions. She doesn't have time to grieve. She doesn't have time to, you know, process. I don't think we see her again until later in the episode, and we don't ever find out, like – how sad she is that this guy that she was really looking forward to catching up with has been, you know, possibly killed, possibly dematerialized. We don't know.
Yeah, we don't find out. Beverly Crusher performs a very important role in this episode, but not an emotional role at all. She's and the parasites, we'll come to this later, but are very interested in Beverly Crusher. But she's not on screen very much, so. Apparently, the writers were not that interested in her, but the parasites were. the Horatio blown up. We assume everybody's dead. This changes everything. Picard's like, all right, We've got to go to Earth. Counselor Troy is like, well, do you want to risk your whole career based on just this guy? Even though, you know, he's dead and I, you know, we are grieving. But really, he just one dude. And Picard says, well, he was my friend and friendship is worth it. So let's go. There was one point I missed, and Picard does like Data. Well, Data, both the thing and the character. So he says, well, before we go running off, let's see. They mentioned so that there are some strange patterns happening. So he assigns Data to look into all the Starfleet orders that have happened over the last couple of years and see if he can see any patterns emerge. And then we have this scene where Data is scanning through all the orders on a little screen, which made me think, well, why doesn't he just directly download the stuff to himself?
R2-D2 can do it a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I mean, do they not have APIs in the future?
Maybe he doesn't have a USB port or something. I don't know.
Maybe he's Thunderbolt and the computer's all USB. No, I mean, that is always, whenever it's the Data or Spock or whomever, mm-hmm. please review all this material. And it's, yeah, if you were anyone other than a super smart android, watching things on a screen very fast might make sense.
But he figures it out. He finds the pattern. He tells Riker and Picard that it looks like some conspiracy is trying to gain basically, by the way that this has happened, officers have been shifted around. It looks like some shadowy conspiracy has gained control over critical points of Starfleet, and things are not looking good. So that is the impetus. That, with Picard's friend's death, makes him think, all right, we have to go to Earth and see what's going on. So they go to Earth, to Starfleet headquarters. I find it also odd, and you can probably explain it away, but they go to Earth and they show the Enterprise approaching Earth, and there's nothing in orbit around Earth. Nothing's happening. It is just the Enterprise seems like the only thing that is near Earth in any way. Now, you could say, well, that's because the conspiracy has sent everything away because they don't want to be found out. But I find that hard to believe, because I would think at that point in time, there'd be like hundreds and thousands of things just flying around Earth, all kinds of alien vessels, trading vessels, space stations, all kinds of stuff. But
one
no.
one would think, but no.
There's nothing. And so they approach. Nobody hails them for a while. You know, they get really close to Earth. Nobody seems concerned. And then suddenly we get a call from three old men in ridiculous pajamas. And they are, in fact, Starfleet High Command, wearing the strangest admiral's uniforms I have ever seen, that they later change because they are so ridiculous, and they seem to have like 18,000 stars on them and a sash and gold borders and all kinds of weird stuff. But it's an old Vulcan and two white old dudes, and they're like, hey, Picard and the Enterprise, you're here, how great.
Yeah.
We weren't expecting you, but this is a lovely, lovely honor. In fact, let's have dinner in 20 minutes, which I found hilarious. And one of the admirals is like, well, sadly, I will not be able to make dinner because I need to beam up to the Enterprise because I want to look around. And Picard is like, okay, I guess. During this conversation happens in two parts. The first part, as I was observing it, I thought, something is up with these admirals. A guy comes in and whispers into the ear of one of the admirals, and he says, oh, give us a minute. And they basically put the Enterprise on hold. and then Riker comes up to Picard, and he says, everything looks fine to me. And I thought to myself, these guys are acting super suspicious. Riker, can you not see what's going on?
There's something super creepy going on here.
But Riker is oblivious to it. Picard, luckily, not so oblivious to it. Then they come back on, and they're like, hey, yeah, let's have dinner. So Quinn, who I guess is a rear admiral and who knows Captain Picard, wants to beam up to the Enterprise. But before he does, he has to go to his quarters and get a Trapper Keeper. And in his Trapper Keeper is a weird pink alien thing. Quinn beams up and meets Picard, who apparently have had a long relationship, and so he's talking about, you know, one of the reasons I'm here on Earth, back on Earth, Rear Admiral Quinn, is because of that warning you gave me a couple months ago about things or something was happening. And Quinn says, oh no, you misunderstood me, I just, you know, and he gives this long, nonsensical answer about integrating new races into the Federation and how it's a challenge, and that's what he really meant. And Picard is like, all right, well, we've got your quarters ready for you, and Riker will stick around to show you around the ship. And Quinn's like, no, I don't need anyone to show me around the ship. I just want to wander around.
I just, no feel reason. Like
yeah. Picard's like, oh, trust me, well, Riker will show you around much nicer. And when he's done, he'll beam down and have dinner. So Quinn's like, fine. And then Picard beams down. Well,
before he beams down, though, he says to Riker, dude,
oh, that's right. Yeah.
That guy is, I know Admiral Quinn. I've worked with Admiral Quinn. That is not Admiral Quinn.
That guy, not Admiral Quinn. And Riker's like, are you, once again, Riker's just not getting it. He's like, are you sure? And Picard is like, yes, I'm sure. And he does say, try and get him to have Beverly give him a full medical scan.
Right.
And I could understand Riker's reticence at that point, because he's like, dude, he's a rear admiral.
He's kind of in charge. Well, and also, like, whenever – and this becomes a major plot point later in the series. Whenever anyone is beamed from point A to point B, their molecular stream is filtered and checked. And yes. Cross-checked, and are they carrying any, you know, mind-controlling space parasites that we might not want to have on the ship?
I was thinking that very thing.
So apparently those are all offline for upgrades this week.
Well, you could, once again, you could explain it away, and I've said this a number of times, if you, on this podcast so far, if I have to come up with these arcane reasons to fix plot points, something's wrong with the episode, but one could say that the conspiracy managed to make those safeguards offline across the fleet because they have high enough control, so they can do that without anyone knowing, and that's how they can beam around.
Well, they introduced a new filtering algorithm. They said, you know, we had to upgrade it. We had to fix some flaws in the filtering algorithm because some stuff was getting through, like athlete's foot. But
that's right. But it's just an update, so you'll have to restart. But it'll be fine.
Engineering officers throughout the fleet, like, you have 173 transporter filtering updates. Except, you know, fine, whatever. Fine.
Critical update again.
Oh man. Fucking Windows 7.
So yeah, he says, nope, that dude isn't who he is, but I'm beaming down to Earth, and I'll talk to you later. So Riker goes to visit Quinn in his quarters, and Quinn apparently is just spending his time looking lovingly in his Trapper Keeper at the parasite for no apparent reason. And Riker comes in and is like, hey, what's in the thing there? Which is a legitimate question, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Quinn says, oh, it's a new life form that's far superior than humans. Riker is perplexed and says, why haven't I heard about it? And Quinn's like, oh, you will hear about it. And then he grabs Riker's arm and he says, oh, it likes you.
It doesn't like your science officer.
Yes, it doesn't like your science officer. It likes you. And he tries to... attempt, one assumes, to implant this parasite, but Riker puts up a bit of a fight, and this is where we get one of my favorite scenes in this whole episode, just because it is so delightfully ridiculous, in which we have this actor who's playing this rear admiral, who must be in his late 60s, if not early 70s, fighting Riker, and the idea is that this parasite has given him great strength, so he can beat up Riker. So he's throwing Riker around like a rag doll.
Yep.
Riker's doing these super crazy high kicks to the admiral's face. You can clearly, I watched this, they digitally stunt, remastered.
The stunt man.
Yeah,
oh my God.
In the next generation. So I'm watching it in HD on a Blu-ray, and it makes the stunt double painfully obvious, but which makes it all the more hilarious and enjoyable for me.
And the Admiral attributes his extreme strength to vitamins.
To vitamins, yes. Which is great. And so he throws Riker through a plate, glass, coffee table.
Which, for God's sake, man, don't have those on a starship.
It does seem like a poor interior decorating choice.
It's a poor decorating choice. Exactly right. It's like if you've got batoliths hanging from the ceiling and breakaway glass tables, you've made a mistake somewhere along the line.
Where is OSHA?
That's right. You're giving the decorating contract to the lowest bidder was a poor plan.
Those Ferengis have made out the
Ferengi decorators.
That's right. But before he gets knocked unconscious, he does alert, he being Riker, alert security that something's going on, and to get to Quinn's quarters on the double. On the double apparently means, you know, when you can get to it. And
it also means send two bridge officers.
That's right. Send Worf and Geordi for some reason.
Oh, man.
So they are running to the quarters. Quite literally, because they show a scene of them running down the corridor. They burst in. They see Riker in shattered glass. They figure out something's not right. But they run over and alert Beverly Crusher to come. And Quinn is like, oh, yes, bring Beverly Crusher to me. But I really do want to walk around the Enterprise. So you guys can take care of this, right, while I take a walk. And Geordi's like, well, don't you think you should wait until the doctor gets here? Quinn does not think that. And so he proves it by picking up Geordi and throwing him through the doors of his quarters. Wherein we find out that the doors are made of plywood.
Again. We have some serious questions about Starfleet's decorating policies.
And then who comes to save the day? Dr. Crusher, who takes Geordi's phaser and knocks Quinn unconscious by repeatedly shooting him with a phaser, which is always a good strategy, I think.
If the opportunity presents itself.
And they take Riker and Quinn to sickbay. Crusher has trouble figuring out what's going on with Quinn, and she seemingly reluctantly decides to give him a full body scan to see what's going on.
Yeah, because the full body scanner is running low on power this week. It's just, you know.
It was strange. The first thing I would do, I'm no space doctor, but the first thing I would do, I want to qualify that.
That's going on the t-shirts for this podcast, by the way. I'm no space doctor.
It's a full body scan just to see what's going on. Or, hey, how about look at the back of his head and notice a little weird pointy thing, which she does notice while he's in the full body scanner. And she says, hey, that's not, I am a doctor. That's not normal for a human to have a spine sticking out of their head.
And you know, you have to note at this point that if Starfleet kept to what would be a traditional military hairdress policy, and keeping everybody sort of high and tight on their haircuts, this whole conspiracy would have dissolved in a matter of hours.
It's true.
Because people would be like, sir, there's a thing sticking out of your neck. I'm going to phaser you now.
And conspiracy and done.
Scene.
Very short-lived conspiracy. So she scans him. Lo and behold, there's some kind of wacky parasite in him. She can't get it out without killing him, so she doesn't. Meanwhile, on Earth, Captain Picard's having a series of awkward conversations with admirals and this guy named Remick, who this is not the first encounter they've had with Remick, apparently. Well, not apparently, but in fact, in a previous episode, Remick was in basically Starfleet Internal Auditing Agency.
Yeah, he was the efficiency expert.
Yep, and he gave a tough series of questions to the crew of the Enterprise. Nobody liked him, but at the end he gave the Enterprise a great report, but still left a foul taste in many people's mouths, so they don't like Remick. So he shows up again, and Picard is, of course, predisposed not to like Remick. Also, the admirals are acting really weird. they're having some wacky wine in space champagne flutes, and talking about, well, let's have some dinner. And Riker will come with us shortly. So he says, okay, well, why don't you go into dinner first, and I'll call up to the Enterprise, see what's happening, and I'll join you. So he calls up to the Enterprise. He finds out Riker was unconscious. He finds out Quinn has this parasite. And he finds out that it can't be removed without killing the person. So he's like, okay, at least armed with this, I can go into this dinner. Oh, and Beverly says, if you have a phaser, put it on, set it on kill, and that's the only way you'll be able to do it. To which Picard responds, one doesn't beam down to Starfleet headquarters armed.
It's like the Shakespearean exasperation. There's like, one does not beam down.
I like really? That moment a lot because it makes sense. Like, why?
That's like the one, for all the illogic and suspension of disbelief in the rest of the episode, it's the one moment where they're just like, you know what? This works in our favor.
It's true. We will go with this.
Why wouldn't Picard have a phaser? Because of course he wouldn't have a phaser. That would be incredibly rude and weird to beam down with a phaser. So I think they did that nicely. I don't know if you were just about to mention it, but the moment at the very end of this scene with Crusher in sickbay, when Riker has regained consciousness.
Yes, and then he creepily comes up behind Beverly and taps her on the shoulder. Well, almost taps her on the shoulder, but she senses his presence and looks around. And then they cut to...
They cut, and this is one of the things about this episode, one of the reasons I was so glad that we were talking about it today, because I remember that when I first watched it, again, initial run on syndication, or initial run when it was on the air in the 80s, was that it creeped me the heck out. And one of the reasons, one of the things that actually makes this episode work is that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you as the audience, and me as a viewer, I'm like, oh crap. Of course, we never saw what happened after the Admiral knocked out Riker. We didn't know how long he had. We never saw the disposition of the creature in the Trapper Keeper. So for all we know, up to this point, Riker has been infiltrated. Now, of course, in sickbay, once they figured out what was up with the Admiral, they of course would have checked Riker and made sure that he wasn't similarly affected. And like looking back on it now, you're like, okay, yeah, there's no way he could have left the ship with that gill thing with the trilobite on his spine. But in the moment of watching it for the first time, you're just like, oh, crap.
Yeah, it's very effective editing.
It's very, very effective. And so then in the subsequent scenes, it takes a while. You're not quite sure what's up with Riker. You do believe, and I believed watching it, that he had been infiltrated.
I totally did, which brings us to the cut to the dinner. And the dinner's weird. There's a weird vibe. Let's just say that.
It's awkward.
And the Admiral's like, hey, Picard, thanks for joining us. Dig in. And so Picard takes the little he has this weird bowl, covered bowl in front of him. Everyone has the same weird covered bowl. And so he takes the cover off, because that's what you do, thinking, I would think it's soup, perhaps. It's not soup. It's worms. Writhing worms.
Oh, so icky.
And then everybody else takes their little lids off. And everybody, worms for everybody, apparently. It's very weird. And then they have this scene where everybody's just scooping up big handfuls of worms and shoving them in their mouths. And it's very, very gross. And then in walks the young female black captain who we met earlier, and we think, oh no, she's been turned. And the Admiral says, hey, Captain Picard, you didn't think we were unaware of what you were doing here. And Captain Picard was like, well, I kind of did think you didn't know what I was doing here. and then he slowly backs away as everybody's chowing down on some worms, I guess thinking they may not notice he's trying to sneak out of the room. But who comes in but Riker? And Picard thinks, ah, thank God you're here, Riker. But as the audience, as Mike just explained, we think, uh-oh, this is not good. And our worst fears are seemingly confirmed when Riker says, you're not leaving. Sit down. And, oh no, he has now been infected with the parasite. And he sits down and is confirming with the other parasites that they're going to take over the world and everything's great. He scoops up a handful of worms, Riker does, and is about to eat them, but he can't bring himself to eat them because he has not been infected. He's the same good old Riker we all know. Takes out a phaser, shoots the one character, we have no idea who it is, at the table, and then Picard does like the weakest karate chop ever to the character sitting next to him and knocks the phaser out of her hand, and she gets knocked out. There's a big fight. And then one of the admirals stands up and runs away, seemingly like a little girl. Now, I don't mean this you know, not in a sexist way or anything, but if you watch this episode and you see how this guy's running, I defy you to describe it in any other way.
Could be like a little boy or perhaps a puppy.
That's true.
Maybe a puppy. He's galumphing away.
He is galumphing away. There you go. Well, I retract my statement. He runs away like a little puppy. An excited little puppy. Riker and Picard give chase. He's down this hallway. He is one turn and he is free. But Picard calls out the Admiral's name, which makes the Admiral stop, look back, and then they both shoot him with their phasers.
Hey,
which, you know, is probably an error on his part. And then he falls to the ground. This little parasite crawls out of his mouth scurries under a door. So Picard and Riker go into that room, and they find Remick. And Remick is like, hey, welcome.
Is there a problem here?
Can I help you? And they are looking at him. And then Picard's like, well, watch out for this parasite thing that's crawling up your leg, right? And Remick is like, oh, that. And he looks and he allows the parasite, which is it's such a gross scene. He allows the parasite to crawl into his mouth and he swallows it. And then even worse, his neck starts to throb and bulge. It's just so gross.
And you know, I was thinking to myself at this point, like, wow, this could not get any more gross than it currently is. And I was wrong.
You were wrong because generally Captain Picard likes to talk things out. This time around, though, Remick says, no, listen, we want to live, coexist peacefully, to which Captain Picard's response is to take his phaser out and shoot Remick. Riker also shoots him. And apparently they have their phasers set on, 400% or something, because Remick's head explodes like a giant rotten watermelon full of ham.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then it gets worse because then you think, well, it can't get worse than this.
I have to say that Robert Schenken, who is the actor who plays Remick, I did not know this. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He wrote The Kentucky Cycle, which is a well known play series. And to think that, you know, you can go from later in your career win a Pulitzer Prize for your writing and still have to live with the fact that early in your career you were that guy who Riker and Picard phasered into having his head blow up.
Well, you know, it gives me hope for my own career.
Everybody's got an arc.
That's right. So they continue to phaser, and then his body melts. He's headless, obviously. So then his chest caves in and reveals this giant, I guess, queen parasite or something that's been living inside of him, and Picard and Riker blow that up as well, and all the other parasites can no longer function, and the episode is quickly resolved. Data does notice that they had been sending out a beacon of some kind, and so he to unexplored space, seemingly telling all the other parasites to come to Earth, and then the episode ends very effectively, I think, with just kind of a shot of space, and they're playing like random noise that sounds like maybe an alien beacon that's being sent out, and it leads you to think, well, this will come up again, and it never does.
And I mean, it is worth pointing out that this the death of Remick, or the death of the mother parasite, easily the most graphic thing that happens in the first season of Next Generation, possibly the entire series.
I think I would argue the entire series. It's pretty graphic.
It's pretty Alien or Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And as an impressionable, not entirely young, but as an impressionable television watcher, I was taken aback.
Well, so the episode is over. What do you think of this episode? Do you think it's a good episode? A bad episode? How would you rank it?
I think I think you have to grade on a bit of a curve when it comes to the first season, mm-hmm. of Next Generation. I think it's a good episode. I think it's an effective episode, and certainly is very, very creepy, very scary. It is a little off the rails in terms of some of the character development. You know, Deanna Troi doesn't have a lot to do, although during the admiral's interview over the view screen, when Kirk says, you know, what, you know, counselor, what do you make of this? And she's like, well, they're definitely hiding something, but I can't tell what it is. You're like, what good are you?
I could have told you that.
It's obvious to everybody.
Well, except Riker.
If you've got a half Betazoid or Betazed empath, this is the sort of
her moment to shine.
Right. The fact that these high ranking officials are being piloted by snails is the sort of thing you ought to pick up on. It should be on your radar.
Thank you for joining me and watching Conspiracy.
My pleasure.
Next on Random Trek, Voyagers Collective.